interned with Honda, you've worked as a consultant with Doro Design.
Yes.
In India, you've been at Artem for, I think, more than 3.5 years. And yeah, now at Dispatch. So quite a journey you've had, and I'm really excited for this conversation. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Detox, the design podcast. Today, sitting with me here is Navneet Kannan, a good friend of mine. I have known him for a few years. He's been at the same design school in Italy as I was, and I've been following his work, which is nothing less than amazing. He has worked at different positions at different companies, and right now he is the chief product officer at the Dispatch Vehicles, which launched their product on the May 18th. And yes, before I even tell, I just missed, I think, one thing that I really, that really caught my attention, even when I was at IAD, was that he won the BMW Young Designer Award in 2016. So when I got to know about that, Navneet, I was completely impressed. And when I saw that project for the first time, it was mind blowing for me.
Right. yeah, that's quite humbling. that project was fun. That project was one of the first experiences that I've had, mm-hmm, where the click happened, right? So when you get a design brief, and by the end of the project, you sort of suddenly get that click. Yeah, this actually answers the brief.
Yeah,
that was like one project that sort of started that whole experience out for me, in terms of answering a brief the right way. So that was fun. Yeah,
crazy. And since then, I've seen you work on different projects. I've even attended your thesis presentation, which was superb, and I still remember all of that because there are very few things that you remember for a long time. And your thesis, and there was another thesis that I still remember. But yeah, so after that, you've also interned with Honda. You've worked as a consultant with Doro Design.
Yes.
In India, you've been at Artem for, I think, more than 3.5 years, yes, almost. And yeah, now at Dispatch. So quite a journey you've had, and I'm really excited for this conversation because I remember many times when I tried to just get some information about what you were working on over the past few years, you would say, you'll soon get to know, right?
right. No, for sure. It's very challenging being a designer and having to work on projects that are completely under wraps. You really want to go out there and scream to the world, hey, listen, this is what I'm working on, and this is what I've been working on. See, this is what it is on Instagram. Like, I mean, all of us do sort of live for the likes, right? So, kidding aside, that was sort of a very challenging process in terms of making sure that an NDA is respected. And sort of not letting even your closest friends know what exactly you're working on. And sort of just trusting in the process, and just trusting in the fact that by the end of it, it'll all be worth it, right?
Yeah. I'm sure you've had quite a journey with the design of the product. And to start with that, I want to first talk about how this whole thing happened. How did Dispatch happen? How did you meet the right person? How did all that happen?
Right. So, what is this, a relationship now? Meet the right person, it seems. No.
I think, man, come on. It's the same with
both. It is, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually like
that. this was sort of a very, very interesting journey, not one that I expected to find myself in. It was one of these things where, right from when I was in design school, I'd started sort of doing a little bit of freelance work here and there. and sort of building a certain level of, I don't know, trust, I guess, with certain clients, customers, whatever you might want to call it. And Rajat was one of them who actually reached out to me when we were in the final year, I think. And this was roughly around the time of the Young Designer Award thing. That's sort of when Rajat had approached me, like back then, for Artem to sort of help with the design process of the scooter. But at that time, we spoke about it then. I don't think we sort of really did much about it back then. We just did a few on and off smaller projects, like graphic design work, logo design work, I don't know, even like email banners and whatnot. So the smallest things, right? And over a period of years, from 2017 to sort of 2020, the end of 2020, we always sort of worked on these projects sort of on and off, right? And I think at the end of, this was when we were doing the whole Artem stuff. And I'd sort of, in a way, sort of come on board, let's say, officially, unofficially, as sort of a designer. And we were working on the M9 scooter, and we were exploring it. But something about it, sort of at that point, didn't feel right, because this was sort of a premium scooter, in a way, that was designed to be. Designed to appeal to a certain type of audience, and we sort of realized ki this is the same sort of audience that a more premium brand, I mean not exactly premium also, like for example Aether was going behind that same customer. And that's when we sort of realized ki our vision is to improve the rate of EV adoption,
right,
and for that we need to answer a question that is relevant today that nobody else is answering, right? That is when we sort of realized ki the numbers associated with e-com delivery and in ride share, it's insane. Like the moment you go and take a look at those numbers, like it blows your mind that there isn't something that is designed specifically for this use case. And what you sort of start to realize is that there are a lot of startups and companies, large companies, small companies, all tech-based, right? That they build a platform, they build the warehousing associated with it, they build everything around it. But how it gets delivered to the final location, right? And how the people actually interact with it, what is a touch point? What is a product? Apart from the app, right? What that is, that was never being addressed. Right, by anybody. And that's when you saw the likes of, you know, for example, Arrival come in with the delivery space. And we sort of realized ki in the Indian context, what actually really works are two-wheelers, right? Without a doubt, majority of deliveries in India happen on two-wheelers. And that is when we sort of wanted to explore ki, okay, this is interesting. How do we sort of go about answering this question? And that is sort of when we got started with the whole ideation process for this, right? We initially started off with a very sort of typical design approach, sketching, all of this. But then soon we realized ki this is much more than a styling problem, right? This is not at all a styling problem, actually. Like, there are more than enough scooters out there that follow the same cookie cutter approach, right? And the issues that were being faced by these delivery riders were not being addressed just through styling. It's not an emotion problem, right?
Yeah.
It's a functionality problem. So that's when we went and spoke to not just delivery riders, but also the owners of these fleets who lease out their fleets to bigger companies, right? And that's how the whole delivery process happens. And we found out that a majority of these deliveries are happening on petrol engine scooters, and in some cases with electric vehicles also. Obviously, with petrol engine scooters, we found out that there were massive problems associated with cost, with you know, maintenance costs, etc. And in terms of, obviously, the carbon emissions is one thing, but that most people, like, of course they care about it, but really, like, that isn't part of their decision making process when it comes to buying a certain product, right? And in our particular case, when we spoke to these people, what we found out was these scooters were being used for maybe a year and a half, 2 years, and then they have to scrap it.
Oh.
Right? Because it's not feasible to keep running it after that.
Okay.
Right? So what was happening was about 50, 60,000 kilometers later, these scooters were becoming notoriously unreliable.
Hmm.
And that is when we first got the word reliability into our sort of design process. And that once we got to know this, we wanted to break down our approach into six very core elements. And that's when we sort of started investigating, and we found six of them, right? So six very key elements. One of them, that it had to be tougher, because it had to survive Indian roads,
right?
It had to be reliable because obviously you can't afford to have downtime when you're using your vehicles to be a source of income for you, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing that we realized was that it had to be connected, right? So when you're running a fleet, it is very, very important that you have a very strong overview, let's say, of where exactly your assets are, what is happening to them, if it's being vandalized, how do you sort of prevent that, if something is stolen, how do you account for it, all these things, right?
Yeah.
And that's sort of when we had this realization key, we need to build in like tracking completely into the vehicles. We had to have a full IoT tech stack built into the vehicle. And this we had done right from the design stage. So you can imagine, this wasn't an integration.
Yeah.
So if you take a look at our dashboard, right? The dashboard is a separate entity in itself.
Yeah.
That houses a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And that's when we realized the position is so, the antennas can be so, et cetera, et cetera. And then going forward, we spoke to these guys. These guys spend up to 120 kilometers a day on their scooters. And that's almost 12 hours a day that these guys are out there riding. And you can imagine the number that's taking on their back.
Yeah.
Right? So that's ergonomics was a huge, huge challenge.
Yeah.
And when we started designing the concept initially, this wasn't something that sort of hit us immediately. Right, but during the process, when we sort of built a mock-up, so we literally went the full Jugadu approach and built a mock-up out of plywood and foam and whatnot,
okay.
And to get an idea of sort of dimensions and how you're sitting on it, the rider's triangle, etc. And we realized, okay, this can get uncomfortable after a little bit. So then we started, you know, literally like chopping away at foam on the prototype. To sort of see how we can make this more comfortable.
Right.
And eventually we found software that sort of specializes in ergonomics and sort of understanding how it sort of affects stress points in terms of your posture. And we worked quite intensively on reducing those, right? So we worked quite hard to make sure that no matter how many hours you spend on the vehicle, like you should have a very neutral riding stance where you don't get any sort of sore muscles, etc.
Yeah.
And finally, the sort of last thing that we really wanted to address was profitability, right? So if a vehicle is being built for commercial mobility applications, it has to be profitable. There's no two ways about it, right? So it needs to make money for you over time. And that's when we sort of wanted to reduce the cost of the vehicle as much as possible without compromising quality anywhere, right? So when you're tasked with this, how do you go about building something? When you have these six very different targets to hit, how do you answer this brief? It's not really straightforward, right? So what we did was actually something quite obscure, I guess. We basically took a side view of a scooter, right? We started off, we removed everything except for what makes you move, right? And what gives you energy, right? So you have your battery pack, you have your motor, and you have two wheels, right? That's it. Now, how do you take this, right, and build a completely rethought idea of what a delivery vehicle should be.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And obviously, like, what would anybody do? They would start sketching on top of this, right? Yeah. We started off with that. We did start off with that. But that is sort of when we threw the whole rule book out of the window. Like, we completely took the rule book, we incinerated it.
Okay.
From the Young Designer Award, right, you sort of know, ki, I've always been tinkering around with parametric design.
Yeah.
And sort of how do you bring in textures and so on and so forth. You've seen this happening in the automotive space.
Yeah.
But we decided to take it like a whole another step further. Right, we built the entire scooter as an algorithm.
Oh wow!
Right, so we built out the entire chassis, the storage areas, the packaging, the seats, everything, everything within an algorithm. And then, literally, like, me and Rajat, we sat down, we started pushing and playing with the algorithm, and we were able to maybe go through 100 different iterations of the scooter in about a day or two, right? And all of this is in 3D. Like, you can actually visualize all of this in 3D, and already, like, all of your hard points are fixed, right? So in that way, we weren't just exploring styling, right? Of course, but also exploring all the other aspects of it together. So with each iteration, we're going through a checklist. Is it tougher? Is it more reliable? Is it more adaptable? Like, when you go through this checklist at such a rapid pace, we were able to really come up with an idea that sticks. If you look at our vehicle as it stands right now, this is the reason why we were able to get the proportion down to something that we were very happy with, right? Like, you look at our scooter, that scooter has 12-inch wheels, but it doesn't look like it has 12-inch wheels, right? And that chassis looks properly, like, tough. Like, how do you do this? Like, you really need to iterate. Right. Yeah. So it's only through iteration that you can get something that you're quite happy with and something that answers such a complex brief.
Yeah.
Right. So once we had something that we thought was promising, right, that's when we started sort of taking it from there and then building geometry around it.
Okay.
So the tubular chassis, of course, like, we didn't have to do much about it, but then okay, now this is an empty chassis. We have a seat. Now, how do you sort of create a splash protection, let's say? So we went with the most rational approach to that. Okay, let's just take a piece of plastic and put it on the front, right? All the way. And we then realized, okay, now we put this over here, but now the head tube is exposed. There's a wiring loom that comes over there. How do you close this? And that's when we put our front panel on there. So our front panel has now sort of become a bit of, let's say, it's our grill in automotive terms, right? We have our sort of metal panel with, like, four screws on it, which has sort of become a design element, let's say, for dispatch vehicles. I think with the next vehicles, you'll see what exactly I mean.
Okay.
And in a similar way, like, everywhere that we found a problem, we addressed it, right? Rather than starting with an idea of what a scooter should be, right? We stripped it down to the absolute essentials. We built a basic package that we could iterate very quickly that answered most of our brief points. And then we built details around it based on our requirement.
Interesting.
Right? And this is sort of what led to the dispatch scooter being, like, very, let's say, unique in the way that it looks. It's because every single thing that you see on that scooter is there for a reason.
Yeah, it's very functional.
It is, yeah.
It's very functional. And it's very industrial also when you look at it, design.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Though, I mean, it's meant for the delivery people, right?
Not just. So we were sort of taken aback when we launched it. And the number of people threatening us to make the scooter for regular people, we were a little bit surprised. So we're not taking anything off the table. But mainly it is, designed to answer a certain brief.
Right.
And I think this is true for most things that end up this way. No? Like, for example, the Defender. The Land Rover Defender is something that's built, that was initially built for a purpose, but now everybody wants one.
Exactly.
And me personally, like I have always wanted a Gypsy. You know my whole story about trying to buy a Gypsy, going to freaking Korg and trying to find Gypsies to buy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't need a Gypsy, but yeah. I want one. Right. So I think it's a similar sort of approach that people have towards this.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun. So yeah, this is designed for delivery and ride share. But it's a product, right?
So yeah, totally get it. And actually, that's what I was about to say, that you did make it for a brief, but it could be chances that people might want to own that, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it becomes very interesting when that happens with the design of a product.
Exactly, because honestly, the kind of reactions that we have been getting to the scooter out there, as a designer, like I could not ask for more.
Right?
Like
yeah.
That's a very sort of overwhelming sensation where people that have nothing to do with the kind of people that you made this for, when they're coming and asking you for it. Right? I think that's a little bit of an honor.
Yeah, that's I mean, that shows how like you've hit the bullseye and even more with that design.
I suppose. Yeah. No, we definitely really worked on getting the proportions really right and the details really right. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of refinement in terms of design, it's inevitable that anything that you put in that much effort into will end up appealing to a few different people.
So how long did this whole process take?
Right, so that's the interesting thing, right? So because of the algorithm, the design process itself was ridiculously short. It was 45 days, right?
Very short,
right? So it was 45 days, and we basically had a version of the scooter that looked exactly like the final one.
Crazy.
Essentially.
That's crazy.
And once we had that, and we took it to engineers, right? Initially, they went, what the fuck? Like, what is this? but then I think it sort of grew on them. Okay, this is interesting. Like, the questions were like, okay, why do you have a 45mm tubular steel chassis on a scooter? That's overkill.
Mm-hmm.
But then once we started explaining these are the reasons behind all of this, they were fascinated by it, right?
Yeah.
And you hear these stories of designers fighting with engineers like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah,
this was a very different experience. we definitely still had a lot of disagreements along the way. But in essence, like I'm sure we'll share it somewhere along the way, the original concept versus the final production version.
Uh-huh.
Trust me, there's barely a 10% difference in from the concept to
That's production. Insane, huh? That's insane.
Yeah. So that sort of shows that even the engineers did buy into the brief and they tried their best to answer it the right way. And like with the engineers too, I think this was, I mean, sort of, in a way, like my responsibility also to make sure that the product comes up in a way where it's something that all of us can be proud of. To come up with very out of the box solutions to engineering problems, right? In terms of production, in terms of processes, how do you sort of do a certain thing a certain way to make sure it looks the way that you want it to look, right? This is something that I think. I'll get into detail at some other stage. I don't think I'm allowed to speak about that.
Okay, all right.
About the specifics
of
what we did.
Yeah.
But this was sort of a very interesting process and sort of getting it from concept to production.
So that's crazy. Now I have two things that are popping up in my mind right now while we were discussing all of this. So you've had a chance to work with businessmen, right? Then you've had a chance to work with the engineers along the process. So let's talk about the first thing right now with the businessman, working with the businessman. So before this, I do know that you had some understanding of how the business works,
right?
Design and everything, previous work experiences. but this in particular is a little different than what you were working on before. What did you learn, basically? What did you learn from this experience?
Yeah. Right. So that's actually a very interesting sort of topic to cover, because we have a lot of designers who now get out of uni. And sometimes you don't end up finding a job in the automotive scene, right? It's really difficult to find it.
Yeah.
And then you have to, in a way, either continue studying, go do your master's, or study further, internships, etc., etc. Or you have to freelance, right? So, or you need to get into like figuring stuff out, just for keeping yourself occupied until you find something. And along the way, I'm sure, like, you will end up working with a lot of people who are not from the design background, right? And in this particular case, it's really, really important, is what I've learned, is to take the role of a professional very seriously and sort of understand exactly what people are trying to say, right? So in certain cases, people have a different vocabulary of words than what designers do, right? And they don't exactly translate always, right? Yeah. So generally, if a person is trying to say a certain thing, the duty is yours to, in a way, say, yes, I understand exactly what you're trying to say. Here is something that I think will answer the brief, but in a slightly different way. Right, and it's very important to keep that sort of honest communication open, because the moment you start in a way, like, just doing exactly the things that somebody else would want, in not just business persons for that matter, even marketing departments, whoever it might be, right, it's up to you to sort of answer that brief in a way that is appropriate to their audience. Right, so that is a very important sort of learning, let's say. And the other thing would be to empathize, right? So to really understand what exactly a person is trying to say, you need to understand the situation that they're coming to you to solve, right? It's very important that you sort of put yourself in those shoes before you try to answer a certain brief, right? And I think this is something that comes to you from experience, but it is something that you can actively try and do. Because generally what I end up seeing is designers sometimes work in very selfish ways, right? In terms of designing something that they want.
Yeah.
And to be honest, that is the right way to work, because it's only when you design what you want to do, you put in your best work, right? So this is where the whole concept of empathy in design, according to me, comes into play. It's when you truly immerse yourself in and place yourself in the shoes of another person, right? And you buy into that, and you sort of, in a way, do method acting in terms of, as a designer, right?
Right.
That is when you can design something that is true to yourself at that particular moment in time, but also answer the brief of another person.
Right. Interesting. Yes. Very interesting. So, what was the, like you mentioned, empathizing with the user and everything. So, how long did that process take for you guys to understand the, like you mentioned, you did go to a lot of people to understand what the actual need was and what the product and shortcomings and the problems that you need to address, right?
Right.
So how long did that whole research phase take?
It wasn't exactly research. It's just sort of figuring out along the way, right? Sometimes you sort of end up doing something without really, without completely understanding why a certain person wants to do something. Yeah. And you start getting frustrated, right? You start like questioning, and like, you don't get it sometimes, and it sort of goes against things that you want to be doing. And worst case scenario, you end up saying, like, okay, quitting the project, or in certain cases you start procrastinating, right? So this is something I think a lot of designers do go through in terms of doing things that they may or may not want to do, but they have to because money. and I think it's somewhere along that way that it sort of hit me ki it's very important ki you understand really truly well that working alongside someone who would want to do a thing anything a certain way would I mean to truly understand their sort of psyche, and once you're in sync the whole process becomes much more enjoyable because you're building off of each other's ideas at that point.
Yeah, right, so that way
it's not like the designer knows more or the businessman knows more or the marketing department knows more. You all start, you know, like interacting with each other. Designers have this very strange habit of sort of like putting down anybody who you think doesn't agree with you. Right?
I've seen that.
I mean, me personally, I'm guilty of that. And that's actually not conducive to creativity, according to me. Right? So the moment you start understanding and you start empathizing and you start building a conversation, right? That is when I believe like true creativity starts to happen in the freelance world.
Yeah, that's true. Cool. Now, about working with the engineers.
Yes.
So it's very true, like you said, that there's a battle that goes on inside the room.
Right.
Right?
Right.
We have heard this not only from small designers, but big designers as well.
Right.
I remember Masato telling us about the infamous battles, right?
Right.
So, what was your approach while you were working with the engineers?
Right. So, in this particular case, with the whole dispatch process, I guess it was much easier because it was so driven by rationality, the whole process, that that too, in a way, synced perfectly well with what the designer, what the engineers wanted.
Okay.
Right. So even though it was a little bit of a challenge, right, in terms of initially, like I said, getting them to sort of understand. But over time, I think it sort of started making a lot more sense. And the moment as a designer, you start applying sort of a very creative approach towards problem solving, right? Problem solving for a particular use case in terms of answering a brief doesn't just apply to a design brief. You can apply that process to anything, right? This is why sort of design thinking has become such a thing in the corporate world. You can you can apply this whole thing to literally anything and you can solve a problem. So when it comes to engineering, I think it's sort of a very similar approach of creativity, right? Rationality along with creativity. And that's a very powerful tool in terms of innovation, according to me. The moment you, as a designer, you start working along with the engineers to solve a problem. And again, I think the concept of empathy comes here too, that the moment you start building a conversation with somebody rather than fighting them on it and being stubborn, ki, I want this, right? That definitely is there. Like you shouldn't completely let yourself go.
Yeah.
Ki, kuch bhi kar lo. Like I'm completely fine with it.
Yeah.
Like that is a surefire way to get into depression, right? Don't do that.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's important to identify problems and to ideate on solutions to that together.
Right.
Right. Designers, engineers, marketing departments, everybody. You need to understand what exactly everybody wants. And you as a designer, I'm not saying it's only your responsibility. Everybody needs to be on the same page, right? And once that happens, you start doing great things.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see when you build something more emotional,
yeah,
less rational.
Yeah,
I want to see what you come up and say when you're working with the design.
I think that's fundamentally a problem with me, that and I think this is one of the main reasons why I don't find myself as a car designer today. I'm sure we'll get into our my whole career story afterwards.
Yeah.
But in a way, a reason why I do not find myself there is I do take design from a very different perspective to emotional, right? Mm. So it's not just emotional design that sort of I go after, but a slightly different approach. So I think eventually I might end up doing something that's purely sort of emotion focused. Mm. But right now, where I am at life, I don't sort of see myself doing that for a while. We'll get into that. I think that's another story.
Yeah. I totally agree. Cool.
Yeah.
So very interesting things that you mentioned. Now, one thing, being an engineer myself,
yeah,
hard one though, but I still know a few things about engineering and stuff. So there are standards in everything, right? So when it comes to, you know, taking your design to the department, there would have been times where you had to standardize everything,
right? That's true. So like I was saying, right? So when we actually took everything out of the equation, initially when we got the brief, and like I said, we stripped everything apart from the wheels and the motor and the batteries.
Mm-hmm.
When we started off itself, we started off with answering the brief of design for profitability, right? And when it came to that, we already sort of knew that we had to standardize a lot of components.
Mm-hmm.
And even in terms of pipes and all of this. Right. So we already had in mind the kind of diameter, for example, that we wanted, and incorporate that right into the design process. So I think in our case, we did the research ourselves and before we went to the engineering team. Mm. But I think before you start a project, it's very important that you know the pain points of all stakeholders before you start. That way, downstream, you don't have to deal with these challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you choose to like list out everything and then,
a very rational
way of working around it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's about minimizing the amount of time that you end up spending on disagreements.
From what I understand from this conversation that we've been having, that in every phase, like you mentioned, design phase only took 45 days. Mm-hmm. And all of these processes that you would have gone through, I'm sure, like I am coming to an opinion or a conclusion here that you have actually cut short a lot of time, you know, coming up with this product.
Yeah, I mean, it's
ridiculously fast, if I have to say.
Right, exactly. So the whole design process was about 45 days. Engineering process has been on since then. We're still about 8 to 12 months away from production. But I think this is sort of not a timeline that you sort of are used to, right?
Yeah.
And I think that sort of stems from the whole process that we have right from the get-go, where it is a very rational approach, right, towards the whole thing. So we already knew what exactly we wanted to do before we started the design process. That helped immensely, right? So and then even with the engineering process, with the design team and the engineering team working together rather than fighting, that was a much sort of faster approach towards this. And like I was saying, again, a culmination of all of these things, like me and Rajat working together during the design phase, 45 days, right?
Yeah.
This was not just me working, you need to understand. So we had the algorithm sort of working in a way for us, right? like a whole army of designers, right? And here we had a really fun way of working together, where we were like sitting up to like 2-3 in the morning, experimenting with things and, you know, like getting the product right. So the whole business side of things, the stakeholder side of things is also taken care of in a very quick way, right? So the design process itself doesn't get stretched out. You don't have multiple proposals. In a way, I guess you do. You have hundreds of proposals, but it happens instantly. Feedback loop is instant, right? And this way of working sort of accelerates that whole process to such a degree that, and it's still not overwhelming, right? It's when you try to accelerate a predefined process that you start getting tired. But when you're writing the process as you go, right, you really don't sort of feel it.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
Very impressive, man. Really happy to hear all of this, finally.
Finally.
So moving ahead from here, you have launched your product. I'm sure you would have got, I can see the amazing response that you've received on platforms. And I've been talking to a lot of people, transportation designers, who were in different companies right now. I happen to have a conversation with them. They're really talking about the product. So kudos to you. And
Thanks,
so moving from here, what is the biggest challenge that you're facing right now that you're trying to solve, let's say?
Right. So right now the biggest challenge is COVID. without any questions, I think the biggest challenge is definitely COVID, because we did end up like doing a lot of engineering work along the way. And we did end up solving a lot of problems that we would have faced later on through simulation, through, you know, like iterative ideation engineering, in terms of weight, optimizing weight of different things. But right now, I think where we're stuck is in terms of actually executing as a team in person, because you can't really execute a hardware product sitting at home. Right. And that is another sort of very, very key challenge that we're trying to solve for right now. So that's the only thing that we're worried about.
Really sounds exciting. And you mentioned 8-12 months away from production, right?
Yeah. So 8-12 months away from production, because if we're claiming for it to be tougher, we're claiming for it to be reliable, we want to make sure that that happens.
Yeah.
So we will definitely be going through a very intensive testing process for this particular vehicle. And rest assured, it will be unlike anything else that's out there on the market.
That's crazy. You're really doing a good job at building the hype here. And you've already done with the design and the launch. It's amazing, actually. The very first time I looked at it, the launch, the video on the 18th, it was something like, yes, I wasn't expecting nothing less, you know.
I'm glad. I'm very glad.
Amazing, amazing design. And I wish you all the best for the road ahead. And I'm sure you'll do write a different story as you're writing a new process.
Oh, thank you very much, man. That's quite kind of you.